figuring out who was asking the question.
Owen?
It took 2 minutes for a response.
Yeah. Carbonated water.
Owen responded with two letters. TX. Jason waited to see if Owen would elaborate on why he asked the question. Apparently the kid wasn't long-winded.
Why do you ask?
Frownface asked for it, and now Rachel is mumbling Perrier under her breath in the kitchen. Her lips were going to crack before they sat down to eat. Rachel placed D'Adria's herbal tea on the coffee table and handed Tarek his coffee. Owen sat in a chair, his cell phone in his hand. No one was talking when she entered the room.
Thank you,
Tarek offered.
Do you have honey?
Rachel's ass had touched the sofa before she popped back up.
Of course.
Once behind the kitchen wall, her smile fell.
Perrier, honey.
Owen walked in behind her.
Don't leave me with them,
he whispered.
Don't leave them alone.
He grabbed a soda from the fridge and walked out. Rachel found the honey, lifted her chin, and entered the torture chamber.
Here you go.
Rachel was proud of herself for not tossing the honey at the woman.
How are you doing in school, Owen?
Tarek asked. Owen shrugged. Rachel glared.
It's okay.
He's getting A's and B's, Rachel added. D'Adria placed a tiny drop of honey in her tea and proceeded to stir.
What is that B in?
Math and science.
She stopped stirring long enough to stare.
Both?
I hate math and science.
Hate is such a strong word.
Owen glared.
I don't care for math or science.
D'Adria smiled, as if she'd changed Owen's language for good with one suggestion.
Much like I don't care for a festering, pus-filled pimple on my butt.
Tarek spit a tiny bit of coffee, and D'Adria choked on her tea. Rachel tried hard not to laugh. Owen sipped his soda and burped quietly.
Owen earns A's in English,
Rachel pointed out.
She's bitching about my B in math.
Jason looked down from his monitor to see the text message lighting up his screen.
Did you try complimenting her?
She's a hag.
Jason leaned back in his chair with a grin.
Calling her a lovely hag won't work.
Rachel sat at the head of her table. The roast she'd been cooking all day was perfect. The gravy was free of lumps. All the sides that she normally didn't bother with played nice and didn't undercook.
How is that new little job of yours?
The woman could cut her with a single word. Nothing about her position at Fairchild Charters was little.
It's working out really well.
Are you still driving in instead of taking the train?
Tarek asked.
For now.
Rachel took a bite, found it hard to keep eating when her appetite was zip.
For the price you paid to park in the city, you could have had a bigger home,
D'Adria said. Rachel held her fork a little tighter.
The company pays for my parking.
D'Adria didn't look convinced.
What was the name of it again?
Fairchild Charters.
Oh, yes. That's right. Planes.
D'Adria pushed the food on her plate around before taking a tiny bite.
They're already talking to Rachel about a promotion,
Owen said. She smiled across the table, liking the praise in his voice.
I would think that would be hard in a company that big,
Tarek said.
Oh, please, Tarek. Rachel is young and beautiful. I'm sure if she smiles at the right person, she'll manage free parking and a pay raise.
Rachel placed her fork aside.
Actually, D'Adria, I'm really good at my job. Is that so?
It was hard to talk when your back teeth were grinding together.
Did you ever work outside the home?
The woman held her head high.
I graduated from Columbia.
Yes, but did you work?
Tarek and I met when we were young. So, no.
Silence filled the table. Rachel wanted to gloat.
That's a pretty sweater, D'Adria. It matches your eyes.
All three adults turned to stare at Owen.
What a lovely thing to say, Owen. Please, call me Grandma.
Rachel saw the internal struggle on his face.
Let's give that more time, he suggested.
Rachel reminded herself to hug the kid when this was all done. Hard.
It totally worked.
Jason had turned his phone ringer on high so he wouldn't miss any of Owen's messages.
What did you say?
I told her the gray sweater she wore matched her eyes.
Jason started to reply, but Owen beat him with his next text.
Gray like dark clouds in a storm from hell. But I left that part out.
He was really starting to like this kid.
Good choice. How is Rachel holding up?
Dot, dot, dot filled the screen long enough for Jason to think Owen was distracted from giving the answer.
The hag started to make digs about Rachel's job. Rachel started questioning if the hag ever held a job. It was getting ugly.
The skin on Jason's neck prickled.
What does the hag know about Rachel's work?
Probably nothing. That doesn't stop the hag from putting it down. Told you she was a total bitch.
At least the kid used a character instead of spelling out the whole word. Rachel cleared the table, tossing most of her food in the trash. Tarek ate his, much to the complaining of his wife, who reminded him of his cholesterol. Of course, she said something more to the tune of,
"Careful, Tarek, your cholesterol is a bit high. Wouldn't want to waste the extra points on too much of this."
Because Tarek had taken her up on more coffee, she was stuck with them for another 30 minutes, minimum. She wasn't sure she'd survive it.
"Rachel is doing a lot of the work herself on the weekends."
"What did I miss?" she asked when she walked back into the living room.
"They were asking about the door frame."
Owen pointed to the half-ripped-out project leading into the kitchen.
"Oh, that. Owen was telling us you've done a lot of projects since you both moved in."
Tarek was working hard to speak before his wife, ever since the woman's snarky crap about her job.
"I've gotten very used to sanding and painting.
We counted 8 layers of paint in my room,"
Owen told him.
"Sanding?"
D'Adria asked.
"Sadly, yes. I suppose it's better than a gym membership." "How old is this house?"
she asked.
"It was built in 1965. "Is that so?"
"Yes. Why?"
Rachel was certain there was a nasty comment hovering in the woman's head. When D'Adria smiled, it unnerved her.
"We have some good news for you, Owen."
Owen and Rachel exchanged glances, then turned to Tarek.
"Oh?"
"Your father is coming to town just in time for Christmas."
Owen paused.
"You mean your son?"
"He means your father, Owen."
"Right."
"You don't seem happy,"
D'Adria said.
"I've seen the man 6 times in my whole life. The last time, at my mother's funeral. Why should I be happy to see him?"
"That wasn't his fault."
Rachel watched the emotion on Owen's face. This wasn't going to end well.
"And whose fault was it?"
Owen asked.
"If your mother hadn't kept you away..."
Owen snapped.
"Don't talk about my mom!"
"D'Adria, leave Emily out of it," Rachel warned her.
"Owen has the right to know his father."
"He knows your son."
"Not as a boy knows his dad. He needs a man in his life."
Rachel wanted to call the woman out, wanted to deck her for the pain she put in Owen's face. "Just because your son isn't in my life doesn't mean there aren't men in my life."
"Is that so?"
D'Adria asked.
"Rachel has a boyfriend. He was here just this morning helping put up the Christmas lights. Something my father has never done."
"A boyfriend?"
The word repeated in Rachel's head, too.
He isn't really a boyfriend.
What is he, if not a boyfriend?
A friend.
Just a friend? Isn't that convenient? What kind of influence are you setting, bringing men around my grandson?
Tarek stood.
Deandria, honey, I think we should leave.
1 minute, darling.
She glared at him, then back to Rachel.
This friend that isn't a boyfriend, that has such a hold on my grandson that he defends the man. Is he African-American?
Rachel didn't see the question coming.
What?
No? Why?
Then he can't possibly be the right man in Owen's life. He needs a man with our culture and our values, something Emily obviously didn't nurture when she chose you as Owen's guardian.
Her jaw dropped. Words escaped Rachel's reply. Owen, on the other hand, used many.
You mean sanctimonious and prejudicial values? Owen!
Deandria scolded. Not to mention rude. Owen stood and walked to the door, grabbed Deandria's coat.
This is a nice coat. You should put it on before we kick you out of the house.
He tossed it on the floor and ran up the stairs.
He is out of control.
Rachel picked up the coat. Actually, I think he used a lot of restraint.
Oh!
She didn't let the woman speak. You're out of line. Pick on me, my cooking, my home, my job? Fine. But pick on that child's mother, and you deserve whatever he throws at you. Deandria had the good sense to shut up.
When TJ is in town, have him call me.
Rachel thrust out the coat, making it clear she wanted them gone. Tarek accepted it, held it open for his wife.
TJ is planning on staying.
Deandria pulled her collar high and buttoned the front.
Good for him.
Rachel couldn't care less.
He wants to settle down.
Her back tingled.
Our boy wants to know his son, Tarek said.
Great.
Not great. Not great at all.
Have him call me. What, to ask your permission?
Deandria didn't know when to quit.
No.
Rachel opened the door. To ask Owens. She locked the door the second they were on the other side and climbed the stairs.
Owen?
She rapped on the closed door twice.
Yeah.
He was on his bed.
You okay?
I hate them.
She sat on the edge of the bed, by his feet. I don't care for them either. He blinked at her a few times.
I don't care for pus-filled pimples on my ass, either.
Rachel mimicked Owen's voice. Owen smiled through the pain. She smiled back and started laughing. His bright face was a relief to see.
I about died when you said that.
I was proud of myself, too.
He released a long sigh when they stopped giggling.
If they ever get custody, I'll run away.
She placed a hand on his leg. You won't have to run. I'll be there with you.
Are you okay? They were pretty shitty to you tonight.
I'm not that bad. Although, I might open a bottle of wine and be unfit to drive in about an hour.
He smiled.
I'll stay away from sharp objects and a need for the ER.
Rachel patted his leg and left his room. Once downstairs, she made good on her threat and opened a bottle of Merlot.
Don't leave me hanging. How did the rest of the night go?
It had been an hour since Owen's last text, and Jason felt as if he was watching the last episode of the season and needed to know the outcome of the show.
They started a fight about my mom.
Jason was ready for a snarky remark and didn't see Owen's words coming.
No.
Yeah, the hag has no right.
No, she doesn't. I'm sorry, Owen. My mom and Rachel warned me about them. I didn't expect adults to act like kids.
Jason started to give advice.
You're more grown up than a lot of people twice your age. Don't talk too soon. I might have told the hag and the hag's husband that you were Rachel's boyfriend just to get them to shut up about me needing a male influence in my life.
Jason smiled at that thought.
I'd call that thinking on your toes and using the resources surrounding you. Very smart.
It kind of backfired. The hag tossed it back at Rachel, saying she was bringing men around the house.
He squeezed his eyes closed.
Poor Rachel.
How is Rachel?
She said she was going to suck down a bottle of wine. I haven't seen her do that since before my mom got really sick.
Should he call her? What is the hag's real name? Looking up hag on the internet probably wouldn't do any good.
Owen gave them both their names, which Jason wrote down.
Let me know if you need me. I'm not far.
I will. Thanks.
Jason took his laptop from his office and settled into the den. He stretched out and typed in the old hag's name. Chapter 11. Two glasses of wine, and Rachel's head spun. Since when was she such a lightweight? It didn't help that she'd barely eaten, but still, the wine did the job of relaxing her shoulders. For an hour after the Colemans left, she researched custody cases in Connecticut. Just like in California, the favor would be for the Colemans, and most definitely TJ, if he in fact wanted to fight. If they were going to be complete assholes, she wouldn't have a choice. She knew they wouldn't have kind things to say about M, but she hadn't expected them to put the woman down. Didn't they realize they were ruining any relationship with Owen by doing that? Or were they that stupid? People used to getting their way all the time did tend to lack the common sense gene.
I see why you didn't nurture a relationship with these asshats, Rachel said to the ceiling.
Emily had told her early on that Owen's grandparents were opinionated snobs. Information she'd managed to get through TJ. They'd never attempted to know Emily, or Owen, until after her passing. Rachel often wondered why that was, but couldn't question Em now, and certainly wasn't going to quiz the Colemans. Rachel yawned as her cell phone rang. Jason's name lit up, and she smiled.
Hello?
Hey, how was it?
He asked. She closed her laptop and flopped back on her couch.
Awful? A zillion shades of horrid.
You want to talk about it?
She did, for a good half an hour. And Jason listened. It's as if she didn't get any reaction from any of her complaints until she hit the right button. Telling Owen his mother was anything but a saint, and wham! Game over. He beat me to it. I wanted to hit the woman.
Violent tendencies won't grant you custody.
Want to know the worst part?
I don't know. Do I?
The Coleman said that Owen's dad is coming around.
For a visit?
Permanently.
Jason sighed through the line.
That doesn't sound good.
Rachel rubbed the bridge of her nose. I have guardianship over Owen only because M requested it in her will and TJ didn't stand up. If he stands up, the court would grant him complete custody, unless I can prove he's unfit.
It doesn't matter that Owen doesn't know his father and doesn't want to live with him?
No. I could have fought the ugly grandparents and been heard. The court might listen to me suggest TJ not be given custody, but he will win.
This isn't good.
I tried to avoid any of this by moving here. Owen and I both decided it was in everyone's best interest to give the grandparents a chance to get to know him. TJ wasn't a factor.
How did Owen feel about the whole move?
Better than most teenagers, I think. He was so wrapped up in M's passing that he hadn't kept any close friends during the last year. And staying in California, passing the same grocery stores he used to go into with his mom, it was hard. Moving erased some of that.
Jason's voice softened.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. I could lawyer up, but I don't have the money for that. And right now, there isn't anyone petitioning for a different custodial situation. I'll try and make nice with the Colemans, invite TJ to get to know his kid,
But at the end of the day, there isn't a thing I can do until they move to make the situation different. And that's what sucked the most, the not knowing what the other parties were up to.
Is there anything I can do to help?
She smiled, knowing already that he'd jump in if she needed it. No, you've already helped a lot. Owen really likes you. Which proved there was a point to the Coleman's argument that Owen needed a man in his life. Rachel had never seen Owen attached to anyone like he had with Jason, and in less than 2 weeks.
He's a great kid.
He is. I wish I could erase all this stress in his life. Jason paused.
You're a decent person, Rachel. Not everyone would take on the responsibility like you're doing.
She shook off his compliment. Who would walk away? Emily was my best friend. I've known Owen since he was 5.
Lots of people would walk away. You know that. I'm glad you're the kind of person who has more integrity than that.
She glanced at the time. Thanks. And thanks for checking in.
Anytime.
I need to go to bed. I have a report to finish up for my boss on Monday, she teased. He laughed.
Yes, you do. Don't think your boss is going to play favorites just because he knows you.
Good night, Jason.
Night, Rachel.
Rachel knew she'd be presenting a more detailed plan to Jason and his management team, but she didn't take in the scope of how many people were going to be in the conference room. The space she'd used the previous week sat 12, and there had been a few seats unoccupied. Now she stood in a room that comfortably sat twice as many chairs, and several extras were brought in and placed along the walls. The teams filed in, marketing, advertising, public relations, all part of the same general team. Risk management, the heads of the broker department, and the staffing manager rounded out the attendees. Rachel lost track of everyone's names. Several executive secretaries were there as well. Toward the tail end of the parade of people, Jason walked through the door. Her heart shouldn't leap when she saw the man, she told herself, but her chemical reaction wasn't something she could control. He was such a contrast in a suit and tie to when he was climbing on her roof, hanging Christmas lights.
Try not to cuss at him this time,
Julie whispered in her ear. Rachel lowered her head and softly laughed.
Good morning, Rachel.
He greeted her with his hand extended. Good morning, Mr. Fairchild. She nearly choked on his name, not sure if she should address him as Jason or not. He grasped her hand, an amused grin on his lips.
Really? I think you can call me Jason.
Fine. He squeezed her hand before letting go.
You remember my brother Glenn?
She shook his hand. Nice to see you again. He winked.
You look much better without the black eye.
Rachel's hand lifted to what was left of said bruise, and she shook her head. You should have seen the other guy. The employees around them laughed.
I don't believe you met Trent.
Jason turned her attention to a man she'd seen in pictures on the internet when researching Jason.
Trent is in charge of our helicopter vacation tours division.
He looked as if he'd just returned from a sunny vacation, complete with a tan and hair that needed a trim.
I'm also allergic to the office, so if you need to get in touch, call. That's the truth.
Glenn agreed. I'll do that, Rachel said. Trent turned to the blonde on his left.
And this is my wife, Monica, the ambassador for our volunteer relief flight program.
Rachel smiled. I'm so glad you're here. Rachel said, clasping the woman's hand. I've read about what you're doing and have some ideas on how to reach farther for your efforts.
We have all the flights we can handle, Trent said.
I mean more financial backing outside of Fairchild Charters footing the bill. Monica had expressive blue eyes that lit up when she smiled.
I like that idea,
Glenn said. The man in charge of the money portion always liked spreading the spending outside of the company. Are you free for lunch? Monica asked. Lunch sounds perfect. Out of the corners of her eyes,
Rachel noticed all three Fairchild brothers exchanging glances as if they were having a wordless conversation.
"What?" she asked.
Jason glanced between Monica and her.
Nothing. We should get started.
For the next 2 hours, Rachel ran through a more detailed global plan to expand Fairchild Charter's reach. She had a laundry list of things to do for each department and suggestions on who would be best to handle each task. She mapped out goals and how to monitor and reach them. She suggested the use of interns, fresh out of college, or those who needed the experience for their grades, to help keep their hiring costs low. Everyone bags on the millennials as entitled young kids who would rather sit on a beach with their laptop than go into an office.
"Sounds like me," Trent said.
The majority of the people in the office laughed along with him. "My point is, we can tap into that lifestyle and benefit from it. Use the empty legs we have sitting around as incentive for each team reaching their goals. Travel incentives for the new grad are more attractive than a dental plan." Melissa, the head of staffing, leaned forward in her chair.
"It sounds like you're gunning for my job, Rachel."
Rachel put a hand in the air.
"No, thanks. I have enough to do with mine.
My approach to marketing and this plan will reach out to the millionaire millennials and the working class millennials. They speak the same language."
"You act as if it's a foreign language,"
one of the brokers said. His name escaped her. "In a way, it is. In one breath, they'll talk about pros of personal jet travel to meetings for work, and the next connect because they both ziplined in the Swiss Alps. There is an entirely new generation of professionals out there that understand there is a time for work and a time for play. If you give them a task, they will complete it on time, but if you force them into an office to do it, you might be nudging them 2 days after the task is due for the results."
"I'd be firing them," Gerald said.
"That's my point. You won't have to, because this generation understands the power of the online world better than anyone. That getting things done and getting it done quickly and efficiently means they have more time to skydive. How many of you have teenage kids?"
Half a dozen hands went up.
"Their phones are attached to their fingers day and night, right?"
"My phone is attached to my fingers,"
Glenn said. "I would guess it isn't for the same reasons. Teens today grew up with technology in ways even I didn't, and I think I'm a bit younger than some of you in this room." Several people smiled. One of the secretaries muttered something about asking her kid how to use her phone. "Generation Z, that's kids born after 1995, are the fastest growing consumers. They have an attention span of about 8 seconds, which means you win or lose them quickly. 76% of them are on Instagram, which is why you see me speaking of social media in all aspects of marketing."
"This generation doesn't have money."
"You're right, but their parents do. 70% of the parents say their children influence their spending." Hayden from accounting piped in.
"Yes, but how many parents will charter a flight for their kid's birthday?"
There were several of the staff who obviously thought Rachel was blowing smoke up their asses. "When I was in L.A., I was known to join my friend for her son's holiday programs at the local elementary school. Do you know what it cost to make a playground a winter wonderland when it's 70 degrees outside? Snow. Man-made snow." The laughter stopped. "Children influence their parents. From snow to a 16-year-old in a brand new Camaro. I'm not suggesting we'll see a spike in teenage-inspired flights, but those same kids that dream of it now will be flying in a couple of years. And that is what we are thinking of." The room was silent. Rachel met Jason's gaze. His slow smile said he approved. Jason stood by when Rachel handed Glenn his requested budget proposal. He flipped through the pages as the conference room emptied out.
"How did you do all of this in a week?"
Glenn's gaze never left the document in his hand.
I wanted to make sure Fairchild Charters didn't regret bringing me out here from L.A.
Glenn glanced up, slapped the file in the palm of his hand.
I don't think that's possible.
Jason felt a bit of pride in his chest, although he didn't own it. Still, for some reason, he took joy in Rachel's success.
I like how you think,
Trent said as he slid a hand behind Monica's back. I'm glad, Rachel said.
I'll meet you in the lobby at noon? Monica asked.
I'll be there.
Jealousy that Monica could have an innocent lunch with Rachel when Jason couldn't sat in his chest. Jason hung back, waited until the last employee had made their way out of the room before he spoke.
Wow.
Is that a good wow, or...
If even half of what you're presenting worked out, I can see our bottom line increase within 6 months to a year.
It's more of a 3 to 5 year plan.
Even better.
He waved his own stack of papers in his hands.
I'll need you to work with Glenn on a bottom line budget.
I'll schedule an appointment with his secretary.
Jason was never so happy that Glenn was happily married as he was at that moment. His once-upon-a-time player brother would have jumped at someone like Rachel before Mary entered into his life. He lowered his voice.
How is Owen?
Kids bounce. He's okay.
Good.
He couldn't think of any legitimate reason to keep her by his side. Rachel shifted from one foot to the other.
Well,
yeah.
How is the Christmas party planning?
God, she was beautiful. Good. I think. You're coming, right?
Yes, of course.
What is Owen doing?
Staying with friends.
That's probably for the best. The brokers really party,
he told her. They didn't deny people bringing their kids, but...
Just the brokers?
No, but they let loose. Most of them used to be Wall Street traders. High stress. We try and minimize that here, but most of them are just wired that way.
Her eyes narrowed. I had no idea.
Well...
He didn't want to leave.
Yeah,
she said again. I should get back to work.
Me too.
Neither of them turned to leave.
This is awkward, isn't it?
She asked, breaking the tension. He leaned closer.
It is.
That's stupid. It shouldn't be.
She gathered her paperwork closer to her chest, smiled.
We'll talk later,
she told him. He stood and watched her as she left the room. Jason was pretty sure his eyes just violated some kind of sexual harassment clause by the way they lingered on her ass. Chapter 12. Monica had Rachel laughing long before their lunch arrived.
So, you call your husband barefoot? From the day we met. If he had his way, he'd walk into the office with flip-flops.
He's one-third owner. What's stopping him? Rachel asked.
Peer pressure from his brothers. He is casual Friday every day of the week, however.
The waiter arrived with lunch and promptly left. Monica picked up her sandwich.
So you're from L.A. too?
Yep, Santa Monica, the last couple of years.
I lived in the Inland Empire.
Isn't that hot? As far as Rachel was concerned, the IE was a place to drive through on your way to Vegas.
Yeah, I hated it.
Why were you there? Monica shrugged.
Grew up there, lived with my oldest sister while I finished nursing school, and eventually found myself in the ER.
The two of them glanced out the window of the small restaurant. New Yorkers were bundled in heavy coats, hats, and boots.
Now we're both here in the cold.
Yeah,
Monica agreed.
It's all good until after Christmas, and then it just gets old.
Really? I was hoping I'd get used to it. Monica turned her gaze back to Rachel.
Sorry, I shouldn't make it sound so awful.
Rachel finished chewing her food.
I'd rather the truth than sugar-coated bull any day.
When I start getting moody, Barefoot takes me to Jamaica.
The perks of your husband owning planes, Rachel said.
You'll have to come sometime.
Rachel couldn't imagine taking Monica up on the offer. Chances were the suggestion was her polite way of making conversation, anyway.
Maybe,
she said, knowing she'd never do it.
So let me tell you about my idea of flying with a heart. Flying with a heart? Is that a slogan?
Yes, which is up for change, but I had to call it something while I outlined my ideas. For the next 30 minutes, Rachel recapped what she thought she knew about Fairchild Charter's involvement with relief efforts from disaster-torn regions and let Monica fill in some of the blanks. Borderless doctors and borderless nurses were partnering players, and Monica and Trent were the liaisons between all parties. Fairchild had started a foundation closer to home for organ transplant flights. As Monica pointed out, it wasn't just the rich who needed a liver or heart, and when the cost of flying was taken into the cost of transporting organs, it often meant people in need did without. They knocked around ideas for finding more backers, putting a heart in all the Fairchild Charter's marketing plans to remind everyone who used their service that their support as a customer helped, in a small way, to help others. By the time they finished their sandwiches, they were both on the same page. They both bundled up in coats before walking outside.
It smells like snow,
Monica said, only 2 feet from the restaurant. Does it?
Yeah, I should get home before it lets loose. I brought my car instead of taking the train.
Rachel glanced at the gray clouds above the skyscrapers. I haven't taken the trains yet, she confessed.
You're kidding!
No, they're so... I don't know.
Hey, I get it. I'm from L.A. too. But driving in the snow and dealing with Manhattan traffic in bad weather isn't worth it. You'll end up in a ditch, or worse.
Rachel smiled.
You mean like Jason?
Rachel glanced over as they walked the 2 blocks back to work.
What do you mean?
That's how I met your brother-in-law.
You ended up in a ditch?
No, he ended up in a ditch. To be fair, I was probably driving about as fast as a nearsighted 90-year-old, and he was trying to pass me on a hill. But he's the one that ended up in the ditch.
You're kidding!
Monica asked, laughing. Nope. I gave him a ride to my house, where he waited for someone to give him a ride home. Imagine my surprise when I walked into a meeting last week to see him there. I had no idea he was my boss. Monica stopped her by placing a hand on her arm. The people behind them just walked around as if they were a rock in a stream and the water needed to move beyond.
He didn't tell you his name?
He said Jason. Last names didn't seem needed. Rachel started walking again.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Rachel wanted to quiz Monica. Why was someone as together as Jason not married? What kind of women did he date? What did he do when he wasn't at work and wasn't putting up her Christmas lights? Was he a sports guy, or would he rather watch a movie?
Someone got quiet.
She shook off her train of thought. Sorry. Monica chuckled.
It's okay. He's a good-looking man. They all are.
I wasn't thinking about how attractive Jason is.
Really?
No, I was wondering why he isn't married.
That's easy. He doesn't date.
Rachel hesitated. Why not? Monica opened the massive glass door leading into the high-rise.
I don't know. I ask Barefoot all the time. He tells me his brother is overly dedicated to his job, and it would take someone special to pull him away from it. Glenn says he hasn't dated, outside a social obligation, for years. Neither of them even know the last time he asked someone out.
Rachel actually snorted.
What?
Nothing, she said a little too quickly. The last thing she needed was Jason's sister-in-law to know he'd asked Rachel out. I bet he just keeps his private life to himself.
I thought that too.
Probably for the best. Someone as eligible as him, and people will start rumors and predictions. I'm glad Trent and I didn't have society breathing down our necks when we were dating. I didn't know his world, and he had only seen a glimpse of mine. And Mary...
Monica pressed the button for the elevator.
That's Glenn's wife. She lived on the West Coast when they were dating. Of course, Glenn was a playboy, so the rumors were that he was dating some movie star or some such garbage.
I thought I read that his wife was a therapist.
She is. Very sweet and always analyzing people.
They moved into the elevator with several other people. Rachel lowered her voice. So what does she say about... She looked around, didn't want to use any names.
Him not going out.
Monica leaned in closer, almost whispered.
Something about him being the oldest, trying to be a role model for his brothers, taking over for his parents in a weird sort of way.
That would have to fade at some point. I mean... The elevator door opened and several people got out. It isn't like your husband is a teenager.
I know. Believe me, Mary and I have been on a quest to set him up.
They reached their floor, stepped out. I doubt that would be hard.
For women? No. But he wants nothing to do with it.
Monica leaned in again.
We even have it set up to auction him off in our spring fundraiser if he doesn't show up with a date.
Rachel started to laugh.
Dinner with the CEO millionaire? Yeah, something like that.
Sounds like a romance novel.
We hope so. He either brings a date or we set him up. His choice.
The thought of Jason standing on an auction block while women bid on him had her grinning. This I'd like to see.
He's a great guy. I just hate to see him solo. I don't even care that he gets married. Just go out and enjoy life a little more.
They came to the intersecting hall, where Monica would veer off to the higher management offices, and Rachel would return to her cubicle. I'm glad we had this time to chat, Rachel said.
Me too. You have a lot of great ideas. I'm sure Jason is happy to have you on the team.
We'll talk again. Monica smiled as she walked away.
Oh, my God!
The snow held out until sometime in the middle of the night. Then it dumped. There was well over a foot in her driveway, and it was still snowing. From her bedroom window, she could see up and down the street. There were very few tracks in the snow, and almost no activity. After turning on her TV to the local news to catch the weather report, she ran through her room, throwing on clothes. Rachel had lived there long enough to hear the locals talk about nor'easters. From the looks of outside, they weren't exaggerating. She all but ran past Owen's bedroom, rapped a few times, and kept moving.
Get up!
Downstairs, she shoved her arms into her heavy coat and pulled on her warm boots.
What's going on?
Owen's sleepy voice accompanied the look of him in flannel pajamas and tired eyes.
Snow. Tons of it. I need to shovel the driveway to get out.
Owen moved to the window and smiled.
Is school canceled?
How do I know? Do they announce that somewhere?
Check your phone. I think the school calls with announcements.
She started back up the stairs, yelled behind her,
I know work isn't canceled, so get dressed and help me shovel.
Sure enough, the school had sent an auto message informing her that Owen's district was canceled for the day, making sure all parents knew that a day would be tacked on at the end of the year to make up for it. Owen was back in his room, pulling a sweatshirt over his head.
One of us gets to play hooky.
Nice! Owen beamed with excitement. Rachel opened the garage door and sighed.
How the hell am I getting to work?
2 feet of snow blanketed everything, and it had blown up against the house, leaving drifts closer to 30 inches. The road hadn't been plowed yet.
Damn, damn, damn! I should have set my alarm an hour early.
She dug in the back of her car and found the chains Jason had given her as a thank you and removed them from the bag. There weren't any instructions, just warnings that using the right size chains for your car was imperative for safe driving. In big red letters, the bag told her not to exceed 30 miles per hour.
Shit!
Getting to a plowed road and removing them would have to happen.
Still gonna be late.
The garage door opened, and Owen walked out.
Wow!
She glanced up from where she was laying the chains behind her tires so she could drive onto them before securing them. Owen had his cell phone in hand. She'd bet money he'd already posted pictures on Instagram.
Grab a shovel, dude!
The previous owners had left an old, rusty, flat shovel, but not one of those broad ones used for snow. Owen picked it up and dug in. There wasn't enough room to back onto the chains until some of the snow was cleared.
"Why don't you just call in sick?"
Owen said, after they'd been shoveling for 10 minutes. All Rachel had to work with was a pointy head shovel that didn't move much of anything.
"Because I told them I'd be there." "Are you going to take the train?"
Owen leaned on his shovel and pulled out his cell phone.
"I can make it."
She kept shoveling.
"I don't know, this looks pretty bad."
He turned the screen toward her and showed her all the red on the freeways.
"I'm sure it's not that bad."
Owen blinked at her a few times, the snow dropping around them in big flakes.
"Why don't you get ready for work? I'll do this," he told her.
She looked down at the jeans she'd tossed on.
"Good idea. Thanks."
Sitting over a cup of coffee and the newspaper on his tablet, Jason watched the snow from the kitchen window. How he'd loved the first snow of the season as a kid. The land surrounding the house was nothing but a sea of white that screamed for him and his brothers to go and sled, build stupid snowmen, bury each other in it. He remembered Shadow, a big black lab that bounced around them during snowball fights, chasing the ammo they tossed at each other. The ranch had plenty of great memories. The screen on his phone flashed, and Owen's name popped up.
"You work in the city, right?"
"Yep. Why?"
2 seconds later, Owen sent a picture of Rachel's car in her garage, snow piled up around a partially cleared driveway. Jason left his coffee and grabbed his keys.
"On my way. Don't let her leave."
Owen's response was a thumbs-up emoji. Did Rachel really think she was driving in to work? When he arrived, she had backed onto the chains and was attempting to secure them around the wheels. The task wasn't easy for a seasoned player. For Rachel, Jason imagined it was nearly impossible. He pulled his Jeep up along her driveway and kept the engine going.
"Hey, you!"
Rachel looked up.
"What?"
Jason waved, glanced at Owen, and smiled. She stood and turned to Owen.
"Did you call him?"
Owen grinned.
"Maybe. Need a ride?"
Jason walked up the drive, his boots sinking into the snow. Rachel's cheeks were red from the cold, and the snow caught on the edges of her hair sticking out from the beanie on her head. She glanced between him and Owen, then at the road beyond.
"We're headed in the same direction, Rachel."
She stared at her car.
"Fine."
When she turned to grab her purse, Jason stuck his hand out for Owen to slap. Rachel paused next to Owen.
"Stay warm. Have fun. Don't get hurt."
"Got it."
Jason walked her to his Jeep and opened the door.
"Hey, Rachel?"
Owen called out.
"Yeah."
"Stay warm, have fun, and don't get hurt."
It was good to hear her laugh. Jason tucked behind the wheel and waved as they pulled away.
"He's a great kid.
I can't believe he called you."
She pulled off her gloves and removed her hat. The static in her hair had it going everywhere.
"I can't believe you were going to drive in this."
"I would have made it."
He laughed.
"By noon tomorrow. Were you really going to drive all the way in?"
The four-wheel drive ate the snow as they drove through. He couldn't imagine a two-wheel drive anything doing the same. That's what the chains are for, right?
Chains will help you around town, to the train station.
Rachel tensed, looked out the window. We're taking the train?
Yep.
He heard her gulp.
It's gotta happen sometime, hon.
Aw, jeez. He reached over, patted her hand resting in her lap.
I've got you covered. Don't worry.
Still, she fidgeted all the way to the station. By the time they parked, the lot was nearly full. Jason had come to the conclusion that Rachel reacted to anxiety with silence. She'd offered one-word answers to his questions on the drive and flexed her fingers many times, as if easing her tension. He walked her through the process of buying a pass for the train, not that she couldn't figure it out, but since her eyes were wide and constantly looking around, he felt the need to point everything out.
There's a lot of people, she said as they waited on the platform. Driving in on a day like this isn't smart. Not only would it take you hours, but the chance of someone driving you off the road is too great.
She forced a grin and stepped closer as other people pushed in.
You'll get used to it, he said when the train rolled up. And the pickpockets are all sleeping in.
She hesitated. Jason took her hand and pulled her inside. They were early enough in the run to have open seats, which he took advantage of. The trains and subways leading into the city had changed over the years, cleaner and safer. A place where everyone from street performers to politicians could occupy the same space with the same goals. With her hands in her lap, she glanced over.
Now what? We have one stop to switch trains once we hit Manhattan in about 50 minutes.
She tapped her fingers.
So what do we do now?
He looked around. There were already people with their heads back, eyes closed, purses and briefcases held close. There was more than one person with a laptop open, and even more listening to music on their cell phones.
I'll tell you what we're not going to do, he said. We're not going to honk our horns, or slam on our brakes, or sit at a dead stop watching the time.
Not that he watched much of the time. If he was that crunched or due in a meeting that couldn't be rescheduled, he would use the company helicopter that sat in a hangar on the property. Maybe not on a morning like this, where the sky was too dark and the ceiling too low to fly, but on a normal, shitty driving day, he would. When the train slowed down to stop and pick up more passengers, Rachel sat taller. He reached over and grabbed her hand.
Is it the people? He asked.
It's just new, I think. I'm fine.
No, she wasn't, but he was determined to make sure she was.
Across from them, a man had fallen asleep, his jaw slacked open. The woman sitting next to him kept looking at him.
Shall we lay bets on how long before his head bounces on her shoulder?
He asked Rachel. She smiled and stared until the woman beside the sleeping man looked over. Rachel looked down and talked over her shoulder. 5 minutes.
I'm guessing 3.
Rachel glanced up briefly.
How will she wake him up? Nudge or noise?
Both. For the next 4 minutes, they took turns watching until the man's head drifted too close to the woman. She shifted in her seat and his head bounced back up, eyes open. Rachel bit her lips together to keep from laughing. Jason nudged her leg with his, pointed out a kid not much older than Owen, bopping his head to the music he was listening to.
I'm thinking he's a musician.
He has the face for theater, she whispered. For the next 50 minutes, they sat while the train filled to standing room only, talking about the people and laying bets on other people's behaviors. And Rachel stopped fidgeting. Twice Jason found his hand covering hers, and once he looked down to see her hand on top of his. Once in Manhattan, she followed close behind as they switched trains. He pointed out the trains that went uptown and which ones went downtown. They stood facing each other and holding on to a pole. A couple of times, he held on to her when the train took off or came to a stop. Unlike the first leg, this time she jumped right into talking about anything and everything. When he led her from the subway and onto the snowy streets of Manhattan, she was chatting like she always did. She glanced at her watch. "I still have 20 minutes." He started walking toward their building. Rachel's legs didn't move.
"What?"
"We can't walk in together."
"Why not?"
"People will talk." She looked around.
"About how we were on the subway at the same time?"
"They will assume something else." He pulled her to the side of a building and away from the mass of people, all trying to get to work on time.
"Which we both know is just an assumption."
She sighed and looked at him as if he had only half a working brain. "Rumors are bad, Jason. I can't deal with that right now. Melissa already thinks I want her job. Julie is starting to look at me funny after every meeting. Gerald just stares." She grasped his hands in hers. "Just wait here 2 minutes. Let me go in first."
"You're serious?"
He was amused. "Please." She blinked a few times. The overly animated movement of her eyelashes said she was trying to sway him with a smile.
Which worked. "This is ridiculous."
He shifted on his feet, knowing he wasn't moving for 2 whole minutes. "Thank you, Jason." She leaned forward, kissed his cheek, and then walked away. Chapter 13. Rachel took great pride when Gerald paused by her desk, 8:30, and stared.
"You're late," she told him, teasing.
"I hope you don't make this a normal thing when it snows. I mean, we do have snow here in Manhattan."
"What the?"
She grabbed her coffee cup, looked inside. "I could use a refill. Want one?" Julie snickered from her cubby. An hour later, she snuck into the break room and texted Jason. "Thank you." He'd been such a sport, letting her walk in without him. She was sure he understood her position, but still, considering how he had gone out of his way to help her through her virginal stint on the train, he took waiting in the cold well.
"You're welcome."
"Let me know when you're leaving, and I'll meet you at the station." She waited while his ... filled her screen.
"You sure you don't want to stagger our departure by 10 minutes to avoid wagging tongues?"
She'd considered that, actually. "The risk of me missing my stop outweighs the possibility of seeing people I know on the subway."
"Ha! I see how it is."
She smiled into her phone. "Have a great day."
"You too. Now get to work. I'm not paying you to stand around and flirt."
Rachel tossed her head back.
"If I were flirting, you'd know it."
Okay, that bordered on flirting. She couldn't text fast enough.
"Someone is cocky." "Someone is fooling herself."
Why was she giddy inside?
"Am not." "Are too."
Were they suddenly 5 years old again? 2 hours later, she replied a second time.
"Am not."
Half his staff was late. A quarter of them didn't even bother showing up at all. And the other quarter kept watching him as he went about his day. Jason didn't care. Rachel had placed a smile on his face the minute she jumped into his Jeep without argument. And she was flirting with him. Good old-fashioned flirting that resulted in silly smiles and warm, tingling shivers deep inside his chest. He soared through his day. It helped that 2 of his outside appointments canceled due to the weather. Audrey kept eyeing him. Twice she asked him what had him smiling. Twice she told her he had a lot to smile about. The hours rolled down to the end of the day. The snow had stopped by noon, leaving 3 feet on the roads and creating havoc most of the day. The same staff that showed up late left early.
Audrey poked her head into his office by 4:30.
Hey, if you don't mind.
Go, he encouraged.
See you in the morning.
He waved her off and picked up his cell phone. Leaving in 20 minutes.